Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles. You are listening to us live on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people who are unfamiliar with my voice, maybe you're a first-time listener, we run this whole radio show thing. And when we started this whole radio show on buildingfortunesradio.com, one of the very first people that I asked to be a guest host on our radio show was Jim Turner. And he still is Jim Turner. We've been doing this for a long time. And as a result of that, he runs with an organization called Citizens for Health. He's an attorney over there almost from the very, very, very beginning. Back in 1993, Citizens for Health got started. He started almost at the super very beginning, but he's been with them ever since. And for those people that are listening in, if you go to citizens.org, citizens.org, you'll be able to sign up for the newsletter and see some really cool things that Jim Turner and his organization has done. As an attorney over there, we've spoken about a lot of different things. Because we're involved in home-based business stuff, sometimes we tie it into health and nutrition and politics or legislation and guidance, and sometimes we go off topic a little bit, maybe like 5G might not necessarily be something that MLM people or home-based business people would sell, but they certainly are influenced by it. So we go over a whole bunch of things, and today we're going to continue. Jim's on his way to where he's going to be eventually parking, so we have a little bit of background noise. Don't worry about that. That'll end. I'm just basically giving him a little bit more time to find that parking spot so he can sit there and pay attention to parking his car as opposed to talking at a radio show. So having said all of those things, make sure you go to citizens.org, sign up for the newsletter, and if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear all of the previous radio shows that we've done. So last week we did something where we were talking about homeopathy, and Jim and I have done lots of radio shows on homeopathy and watching how that's been going through the guidance challenges that they've been going through. But there's a lot of people that are listening in that need to perk up, because sometimes you say, well, you know, what does that mean to me? Or, you know, or does it mean something to me? Well, it does. So more than less likely, some of the things we speak about have some level of connection, either directly or super directly, to the things that you're working on. And this is going to be another one of those topics. Jim introduced something, and Jim, I'm going to mute you out only while I go through my little ramble as I set this up and kind of educate you on one of the things that I wanted to bring you up to speed with as well, so I just muted you out. And by the way, we try to do this radio show on Fridays at noon Eastern time, so for you that listen in and want to kind of schedule it in so you could listen to live, that's why we try to do it live wherever he is. So last week we did a radio show and Jim introduced Donald Trump's executive order on guidance and transparency. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I'm going to botch part of this up technically speaking, so I'll give you the layman's version of some of the things that had happened. So I really didn't understand what that was, because this is the first time I heard about this guidance executive order, because, of course, a lot of the news broadcast groups are not going to show anything positive that Donald Trump has done. So I listened to Jim, and then lo and behold, a little bit later that day, there was a company, or is a company, called Neora, N-E-O-R-A, in the network marketing world, which formerly was called Nerium, N-E-R-I-U-M. So Neora / Nerium and the company owner, Jeff Olson, and some other people that were providers of the ingredients of this, one of these products, were sued by the FTC. The providers of the ingredients I think it's called Signum or Signum. It's S-I-G-N-U-M. I think there are two subsidiaries or something like that. Well, they already settled with the FTC about the claims that they made about the active ingredient, which I believe was called or abbreviated EHT. So there's an active ingredient that they were saying does stuff with concussions, brain trauma, Alzheimer's, all those things related to repetitive things, PTSD. So PTSD is a file format for, you know, so you can tell I do techie stuff. Anyway, so PTSD, they sued the ingredient manufacturers for some of the medical claims. They settled, I don't know what they settled with, but they sued Neora for being a pyramid scheme, which has nothing to do with the active ingredients. They sued Neora for income claims, and of course they threw on there that whole medical claims thing. So when Jim Turner mentioned something about guidance, I realized that, oh, wait a minute, right after the FTC sued Nerium and the company owner and the other people, the Nerium or Neora company and Jeff Olson sues the FTC based on what grounds, you might ask? Based on the Donald Trump executive order grounds about guidance and how there's overreach, I'm going to use my words, of the FTC in regard to the clarification that they need. So I jumped into action a little bit later on that evening, and I figured, well, somebody probably did a YouTube video of Donald Trump and the executive order, so I watched that, and then I reread everything, and I just think that it's probably going to fall on its face relative to the Neora FTC lawsuit, meaning Neora suing the FTC. I think that's going to fall apart based on what is obviously a pretty big precedent that's been pretty clear on the guidance part relative to this specific example in Neora. But I want Jim to come back, and I'm going to open up his mic and give us a little bit. I gave him a little bit of time to hear this story, plus maybe find a safe parking spot. So I'll let him talk about what happens or what is happening now with homeopathy, and then also now he has a little bit of backdrop to be able to blend his answer to whatever he wants to mention relative to this MLM company suing the FTC, and we'll continue after that. So here we go. Jim, your mic is live.
Hi, Peter. I did listen to all of that, and yes, Vera, I think you did a great job laying out the dynamic that's underway. It's very important to understand why President Trump would issue an executive order against guidances. In fact, maybe many presidents would do that. The issue that is involved there is that the government agencies are issuing guidances to enforce the law. What a guidance is written by the agency to say, this is the way our agents interpret, this is the way we interpret the law, and we're telling our agents to enforce it that way when they do an inspection or write a warning letter or take any action at all, they will take the action that is in the so-called guidance. The peculiarity and significance of the guidance is that a guidance explicitly says in its own text, all guidances say explicitly they are not necessarily the law. They do not create any new legal rights, and they do not create any new legal responsibilities. And in FDA guidances, it explicitly says, if you do not agree that the way we think about the law is the proper way to think about the law, come in and talk to us, and we'll see your ideas, and maybe you've got a way that we can say is fine. So what you've got here is basically it's a we are arguing in our cases, we're arguing that it's an arbitrary and capricious action on the part of the regulatory agency to say, here's how we're going to apply the law or interpret the law, because that leaves the citizens out there completely unaware of what is going to happen, given that the statute that they're operating on might be interpreted differently, say, for example, by a judge. So in the midst of that, President Trump has issued this order on guidance, this executive order, which is designed to say agencies have to be more transparent, they have to be more rigorous, they have to be more accurate, basically, in their interpretations of the law. It's a very serious problem because, from our perspective at Citizens for Health, it undermines the consumer's right to have access to a market that has in it things which may not be conventional, but which might be useful to that individual consumer. So we talked last week about homeopathy. Right now, the FDA is taking very stringent measures that will undermine homeopathy, and they're doing that by using a guidance. And they're saying, we are going to interpret the law to mean that a homeopathic remedy is not legal unless it goes through a double-blind, placebo-controlled set of studies, unless it goes through new drug and new drug approval by the FDA. The problem with that is that one ingredient in one product going through the FDA rules costs about $100 million. And there's going to be no way that any homeopathic company can take any homeopathic remedy through a double-blind placebo-controlled study financially. They just don't have the wherewithal. And equally, if not more important, is the fact that homeopathy does not comply with the theory of homeopathy and the way it works and why people are getting such benefits from it, is the fact that it operates differently than a chemical drug. And a chemical drug, you can do a double-blind placebo-controlled study, but you can't do one on homeopathy. Homeopathy is totally individualistic. The practitioner sits down with the patient, and they talk through the patient's conditions, and then the homeopathic professional says, use this remedy. To the extent that this is an individual-based medicine, it's not possible to create a double-blind placebo-controlled study on a chemical or a remedy. The reason being that, for example, in some situations, a remedy might be exactly the right thing for an individual and be exactly the wrong thing for another individual. And to do a double-blind placebo-controlled study would not tell you who could rely on this remedy going forward. So that's the homeopathy piece. Another interesting example that we're also involved in is FDA has got a guidance that is being used to challenge natural pet food, because they're saying you must have pet food that has zero tolerance for salmonella. That is not the tolerance for human food, and in fact, it's not the tolerance for good health. If you go to a zero tolerance salmonella standard, that means you're going to have to create the food as processed food. And the processed food not only gets rid of salmonella, but also all of the other positive components that are in meat products that are used for pet food. And so not only would you be eliminating natural pet food generically by doing this, you would also eliminate all the positive aspects that are a part of a balanced natural food, which has some things like salmonella, some minor residues of something like salmonella, plus things that put the salmonella in balance. Now, our point is not what the answer to that question is. Our point is that if the FDA really seriously believes that there should be a zero tolerance in salmonella, the proper thing to do is to propose that as a regulation so that everyone who's affected by it can come forward and say, here is why that zero tolerance will be more dangerous to consumers than having the same tolerance that we have in human food. And that process should be allowed to go forward, but the guidance eliminates that process. And one of the things that the Trump executive order does is create a pressure to do the kind of regulatory process policy development, regulation development undertaking that the Administrative Procedures Act requires. So I mentioned that, they're going to use the guidance to undermine the health of natural pet food and pet food in general. They're going to use the guidance to undermine the health of the individual in relation to pharmaceuticals when they restrict homeopathy. And these guidances are being used quite robustly across the country, across the regulatory agencies. So that's the guidance issue as it's come forward. Peter, does that clarify any of the thinking? And do you have any questions on that?
It sure does, and I'll just kind of point something out. So in my research, because I couldn't call you, because it was like Friday, I'm listening to this stuff, the FTC is getting sued and stuff like that, so I went to my YouTube movies. So I went to YouTube, I typed in Donald Trump executive order, October 9th, 2019. So for those people who want to do the same thing, you can go to, YouTube, because YouTube usually does something on something. So if you go to Donald Trump executive order, October 9th, 2019, you'll see there's a whole bunch of videos for over an hour long. And while you see Donald Trump signing the order, he is also, doing his commercial for the order, if you will, or explanation for the order. And he brought up several guests. And he said, this is the reason why we're doing this. One of them was a gentleman, and I may have some of the details wrong, so, don't beat me up for this one, guys. But one of the gentlemen had a pond that he put on his land in Wyoming. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, I guess didn't like the idea that he put his pond on his own land in Wyoming, and they fined him using this guidance $16,000 a day. Well, the fine, or $37,000 a day, and a fine was reaching over $16 million. So imagine that. You got a Wyoming, largely just land, probably no one around you, no one knows you're putting on a pond except for you. You put on a pond, and then all of a sudden, knock, 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 maybe even guys with guns drawn, they're issuing you a fine. It's $37,000 a day. Get rid of this pond. How in the world could you do that even if you wanted to comply? What's wrong? I got a pond. My generations before me have been putting ponds on their land since forever. And then there's an agency that fights the government agencies that's kind of jumped in the way and beat down the EPA and won in court. But this guy could have never done that on his own. There was another gentleman who was raising oysters on the Pacific Ocean coast and raising oysters for over three generations. So he's a three-generation oyster farmer. It must be pretty big because he had a big oyster farm. Well, there's some new regulations similar to what Jim is mentioning with the dog food. The EPA comes in, you have to do this, this, and this. It's going to cost us millions of dollars. We can't do this, this, and this. They wound up shutting him down, beating him up legally, closes down the farm, kills 200 million oysters. And because of this situation, and Donald Trump is using those examples. So those examples, I can get it, like where the guidance thing comes from. Maybe they don't have it listed on the website. That's what they're saying. Maybe they're not as clear as they need to be. Maybe there's no discussion because there was no discussion available for those people to get this overturned. But now, Jim, I'll let you comment on that. And then if you can, I know I'm just presenting to you the first time this Neora thing. If you have any opinion, I know it's the first time, so it's hard to have an opinion on something you don't know a lot about or haven't researched. But if you have any opinion at all on how that guidance might affect this MLM situation as well, I'd love to hear it. So back to you.
Well, there's a problem. There's a problem with the president's executive order in that it too is a guidance. What the president's executive order says, it's very similar to a signing order that the president or a signing statement that the president makes when he signs a law. He says, "Yes, I'm going to sign this law." I'm going to sign this legislation into law. However, I'm going to instruct my officials in the administration to enforce this law in the following way. And then they lay out the following way. Now, whether the following way is the way a judge would see it or not is an issue that goes to court. And the problem, I think the general problem that we have in our culture today is that individual people are not willing to be confined in the narrow framework that the politicians and the regulators have been using over the last 50 years. I think it's best to start marking this from the end of the Second World War, because the end of the Second World War in the United States opened up a huge economic explosion. Remember, before the war, we were in the Depression, and before the Depression, we were in the Roaring Twenties, where there was a kind of misallocation of resources that we're going through now. So everything was closed down. That is, they were made very tight. And what's happening now is people are blasting out of that, and they're doing it in many ways. You know, and you can see it with the multi-billionaires, but you also see it with the MLMs, and you see it with the home businesses, and you see it with individuals coming up with unique ways of participating in the economic part of life. In our thinking, we call it economia, which is a kind of a Greek word about the fulfillment, the full nature of life that includes economics. You don't take everything in life under economia. You don't take everything in life and reduce it down to what the spreadsheet says. The spreadsheet is kind of like an X-ray that gives you a sense of what all the robust stuff that's going on actually looks like when you analyze it. Financial measures are supposed to be tools to measure your behavior, not to control your behavior. And people are breaking out of that. MLMs are one of those things. Well, the regulators don't like that. The regulators, it's just very upsetting to them to have people making their own decisions. The idea of empowering people is the antithesis of the regulatory process. The regulatory process is designed to protect people at its best. It's designed to protect people. But most frequently, it is actually operated to protect a vested interest that's already ensconced in the market. So along comes an agency, and it says, we don't like the way this is happening. I mean, homeopathy's got about a 15% growth rate over the last few years, and it's cutting into the pharmaceutical marketplace, so we got to do something about it. Or natural pet food is cutting into the processed pet food marketplace. We got to stop that. Organic food, when it came along, was like this. Organic food was problematic because it was pulling a significant amount of customers away from processed food. Local farming is another example. There are all kinds of regulations all over the place to try to block local farming. And they make up stories that there's going to be hell to pay if people actually get control of their own lives. So what we need to do is make sure that we protect them. We have to protect them from the predators and from themselves because, you know, clearly people are stupid in the mind of the regulator. And they run studies to say, how stupid are people? Well, they're so stupid we have to have a rule that says they can't do this. Okay, so along comes, they're having a hard time because more and more laws are changing, and the regulators are sitting over there saying, what should we do? We argue that the Food and Drug Law, says homeopathy is totally legal. The regulators are saying the homeopathy is a bunch of quacks selling products to a bunch of fools. The fact that there's 200 years worth of experience, not a single injury that can be found traced to a homeopathic product in that 200 years, and that there's an enormous number of people, it's the second largest form of medicine in the world, enormous number of people who have solved complicated health problems that the drug world can't solve out there, actually using homeopathy, none of that evidence works for the process. But writing a rule, and then they have to propose the rule, and then the public comes in and says, well, look, here's all this data you got to think about. They don't want to do that. What they want to do is issue a statement, a fiat, which they call a guidance. It's a fiat that says, here's the way it's going to be. And increasingly, both Democrats and Republicans politically are getting unhappy with that. And in your case, the case you mentioned, the MLM case, the lawyers for the MLM are wanting to interpose the guidance from Trump to say, you can't do that, that you have to, that under this guidance, you have to have a regulatory process where there is a hearing or notice and comment, they call it, where you put arguments on paper, and then they have to make a ruling because that ruling can then be reviewed by a judge. And they're saying to the judge in this case, they've got to send this back to the FTC and have the FTC look into this.
That's
what I need. Now, whether that works or not is a very
simple thing. Your phone did something, Jim. Hey, Jim?
Whether that works or not, we'll not know until a judge makes a decision.
Oops.
If a judge makes a decision, I would suspect that either side, whoever wins, whoever loses, either side, whether it's the FTC or the NLM, whichever one loses will appeal to this case. Well, I don't know whether it's in the district court or the appeal court.
Hey, Jim? Jim?
In that case,
no,
it would go to...
I'm going to put him on mute for a second, and then I'm going to give him some time to listen in because we lost your volume.
And,
hey, Jim?
If the Supreme Court considered it, then you would have a situation in which you would have a situation in which the Supreme Court would make a ruling, and then we would know the answer. So is that,
hey, Jim,
is that useful?
Actually, we lost your last 2 minutes. Something happened. Your volume went way down. We could only hear.
Okay, well,
like
let me go back and I'll do the last 2 minutes. I don't know what happened, but here we go. What I said was that the imposing the Trump for the MLM's lawyers to impose the Trump Trump guidance, the Trump executive order as a defense will have to be determined by a judge. It's a very creative thing to do. I think it's very useful. And then the judge could either judge could rule and say, look, go back to the administrative agency, the FTC, and make a rule, and then we can review your rule. Or they could say, yes, we agree with the FTC, and they can use the guidance. Either side that loses in that case, I would predict, will go to the Supreme Court, and then if the Supreme Court is interested in the case, it will take it on and make a determination. And my sense right now legally is that a number of cases challenging guidances are coming along, and there will be challenges to guidances all over the country over the next few years, because this is just pure arbitrary authoritarian management of the system. How do you know? How do you know what you're supposed to do if the law says X and then the FTC says Y, and the why has not gone through a process of being evaluated and tested and then gone to court and been approved and so forth. And then there are very important matters that you mentioned at the beginning that are involved here, such as the health claims. I think the whole health claims area, which both FTC and FDA are relying on, really pushes the constitutional envelope pretty far, the way that the agencies are doing it. Way, way back in 1911, there was a wonderful case that the Congress ultimately, all by legislation, but the case said that when you say, and this is a cancer cure case in 1911, when you say something can cure cancer, unless you can prove that it's a fraudulent claim, that the person making that claim knew the claim was untrue, unless you can make that proof, then the claim can be permitted because people have the right to be able to decide on their own. That's a 1911 Supreme Court case. It was written by Oliver Wendell Holmes. And then in 1912, Congress passed the law that said you wouldn't necessarily have to prove that you wouldn't have to prove that there was an intentional misleading there. And that proof was that legislation was never tested in the courts. It sits out there without ever having been reviewed to see whether or not it's constitutional. I believe that that's something that should be attempted. But in any case, all the stuff that's being done by the agencies now is being done, the vast majority of it is being done by guidances. And that is going to have to that whole apparatus is going to have to come down over time, and I would think probably in the next few years, 3, 4, 5 years maybe. And they're going to have to go back at the agencies and continue or reinstitute making proposed regulations that the public can then challenge and say, well, we don't like this regulation. We think it should be this way rather than that way. So that's kind of a summary of the situation. Would you hear that all right, Peter? Would that come through?
Yep, that was That was absolutely perfect. And you opened up some questions for me. So I know, again, I'm going to throw in some wiggle room here because you don't know a lot about the Neura situation. But let's just talk theoretically. So an MLM company gets sued by the FTC for the same things that they've sued and won or settled. I guess the FTC really never usually doesn't fight it in court. They usually settle it. So usually the FTC settles all the things that they're fighting Neura on or sued Neura for this time. Now Neura decides that they're going to sue the FTC, and in my best guess, this puts everything on pause, like, you know, as far as from both sides, because I'm guessing. But is this a good move for the company and the industry, or could this be a move that eventually backfires on the company and the industry?
Well, the answer to that question is yes. Either of those things could happen.
Yep.
But I want to highlight what I think the social structural problem is in the whole way that the case is being presented. And that is that in your conversation, there's no voice of the consumer. So ultimately, in this case, there are two levels of consumers. There's all the people who participate in the MLM, because remember, there's always a distinction between the company and then all of the people who are in the downline. This is also true in franchises. The franchisees are different than the company. You know, you go into a McDonald's store, one-third of them, roughly, I don't know the exact number, but one-third of them are owned by corporate, the McDonald's corporate. But two-thirds of them, roughly, are owned by individual franchisees. Those are two different interests. And the system's not well organized to have that issue sort of have the interests of those different parties sorted out. And we're one of our biggest arguments at Citizens for Health is that we believe extremely strongly that any kind of new information that emerges about a potential health effect should be allowed in the marketplace. I mean, we're happy to have it marked as potential. We can say the FDA does in the dietary supplement world does have a disclaimer that says FDA has not reviewed this information, but that's because of an act of Congress that said you have to do that. And you can make claims in the structure function claims in the dietary supplement area, which the FDA does not have the opportunity to review before they're published. They have to be supported by substantial evidence, but they are not. They do not get regulated by the FDA the way that a so-called health claim gets regulated. Now, a health claim has to be reviewed by the FDA. The law says before it's allowed to be made, the FDA has to approve it. I believe that's a violation of the Constitution and should not be allowed. As again, that's another piece of legislation that's never gone to actual constitutional resolution. Now, in that setting, when you have the kinds of rules that FTC has against MLMs, those need to be much more carefully tailored. They need to go through the administrative process, and there needs to be a real social analysis of what's involved here, because the individuals who are the downline people, this is true of franchisers too, the downline people, the franchisees, the ultimate consumers that buy the product and so forth, are not represented in that whole process that is going on right now. You've got a company that's being sued by the government, and you've got a guidance that's being used by the agency, and then you've got the company interposing a federal a presidential executive order. That's a mess. It's a huge institutional structural mess, and the actual person who's driving the economy, the consumer, is not even a participant in that whole dynamic. And so basically you can rest assured that whatever the outcome of that case is, it will be something that undermines the interest of the consumer.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, in reference to, I know in this example, there's a multiple.
By the way, the FTC would vigorously deny that, because they say that they are representing the consumer. But
right.
The problem is that the agencies, the regulatory agencies, all of them are consumer protection agencies. They are not consumer empowerment agencies. They do not have a significant interest in having consumers be capable of making their own decisions. Their interest is saying there are a bunch of decisions consumers should not be allowed to make, and we will make the rules that say what those are. And that what they do is they take away from the consumer a whole bunch of areas where the consumer could, in fact, participate. Are there things like that? Yes, of course there are. How do we find out what they are? Well, we don't find it out by having the agency announce it in a fiat that's not even a legal interpretation, but merely it's an eruption of preference on the part of the agency, mostly because they're overworked, so they don't have enough time to do everything. So they say, all right, we're going to get rid of all homeopathic remedies, or at least we're going to create the opportunity to get rid of all homeopathic remedies, because for us to sort out anything that might be a problem from all the stuff that isn't a problem is just too much work. We just don't have the resources, we don't have the time, and we have all these other big issues going on that we have to deal with. We can't be bothered with working out the homeopathy issues. Same thing with the MLM issues. MLM issues are minor issues compared to, let's say, whether they should do a multi-billion dollar fine against a tech company that has been violating people's privacy or doing other bad things to people. As far as they're concerned, an MLM company, even the biggest of the ones that they've gone after, are small potatoes compared to the big issues in the economy, and they have the argument to say, we have to put all our time and resources over here. We can't spend a lot of time over there. Therefore, we're just going to do a guidance, tell you how we're going to do it, and if you don't like it, come in and talk to us or, you know, file a petition or do whatever you want to do. But as far as we're concerned, that's the way we're going to do it. And then, you know, the company itself, of course, is not given a fair hearing in that regard. And then, as I mentioned, in an MLM or a franchisor, the people who are outside corporate, they're not given a fair chance. And then the consumers of those people aren't given a fair chance. So in that dynamic, we have a situation which has got to sort itself out. And I believe if it isn't sorted out meticulously by the law, working hard to sort it out, it's going to collapse. And the regulators are going to lose an enormous amount of power. And I'm not sure that that's ultimately in the long run a good idea, because they should lose all the power they're using badly, but hang on to the stuff that's important to protect consumers.
Great information. So in reference to this example, and I'll send you some of the court documents on this if you want to take a look at it, save you some time.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, very much.
But in reference to this, we have one company that's now going to take on the FTC. If you were to say to me, okay, this is an important one, would Neora be the one, Peter, that you'd want? Do they have the strongest case to take over the FTC? I'm like, no, not at all. No. So that the weaker company tries to take over the FTC, forcing this and probably like kicking a hornet's nest, in my best guess, because I'm sure they don't like to be challenged. Could this hurt, or show me how this could hurt or help the industry relative to some of the things that they're fighting, which is income claims, medical claims, income disclosure type things, advertising as far as the false advertising is concerned, as far as lifestyle, the rich and famous. So do you think it could do more? And I know the answer is going to be it depends, you know, because it probably could go both ways based on who might be hearing it. But is there a potential light at the end of the tunnel, or is there like the wrong kind of light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and what you're trying to ask me is it a train coming or is it the sunlight on the other side of the tunnel?
Right.
And it's really hard to tell when you're looking down there and all you can see is the light.
It probably depends more on the law firm or firms than it does on the company. Because if you have
More than anything, it depends on the judges. And as
okay.
I said, you'll have you'll probably have. I'm not sure which court this is in, but let us just assume that it's in a. If it's in a district court, you'll have one judge make a decision. Then it will go to the appeals court. If it's in the appeals court now, that's the same as if it went there after a one judge decision. And then you got a three judge panel, and they make a decision, and then you can appeal to the full body of the court, which can be 15 or 20 judges. You could do that, or you could go directly to the Supreme Court. So it's the judges that where the answer to your question lies. Now, the question is, how do you get before the judge the issue that would be important for the company? And again, it's extremely hard for a company to be taken seriously and be credible in making an argument on behalf of the consumer. It's extremely difficult. And so I will say that the most important single case in the misuse of federal power in the regulatory area is the Schechter poultry case from about 1937. And that case was brought by a small chicken manufacturer, chicken processor. And they were very successful all the way to the Supreme Court and got the entire regulatory system of the New Deal thrown out as being an unconstitutional delegation of authority. I believe that doctrine is one that needs to be brought into play here. And it's very important to understand that that's a doctrine that comes with support from both conservatives and liberals, neither of which, that there are the conservative libertarian wing of things. There are a bunch of conservatives and a bunch of liberals who do not believe that the authoritarian nature of government should be given loose range, that they should be, that government should be significantly controlled. And there are people on both the conservative and the liberal side who believe government should have more power. And we see them battling around in our current situation all the time. I mean, there are cases in which the argument is that government should not be overriding this situation, and you'll see conservatives making that argument, gun control, for example. On the other hand, you'll see arguments that say, yes, we want government to override and make rules. And you know, that you'll see that from conservatives in the abortion issue. And you'll see the opposite in the on the liberal side, where liberals want government to do something about guns, but they are very loath to have government make laws against abortion. So what I'm saying is that the dynamic of what's going on in the MLM battle is very important. MLMs are a very important economic framework that when run honestly and straightforwardly can promote an enormous amount of value to individual consumers and people who are in the MLM structure. They are also easily ripped off by charlatans. So the question is, how do you do that? And I'm saying that if you try to sort all that out without having a consumer voice in it, you'll end up with some kind of a shambles on the other end. And I think that's pretty much where we're likely to go. The only issue is what, you know, the shambles will not be in good for the consumer, but we don't know where it's going to be with regard to government versus industry at this point. That's something, as I say, the judges will decide.
Now, this, and I'm taking bonus time from you, but this last question, how long does all this take? It's not going to be like a Donald Trump impeachment process. How long does all this take? Like, are they doing this to pause the inevitable FTC fine, or can the FTC fine them in spite of the other suit? Like, can one case go on its own, or is it going to be paused by this now counter lawsuit?
The counter lawsuit is a pause of some kind. It's hard to know how the FTC will react, but even the executive order from Trump has got to put the folks in the government on notice. They've got to, it's like a bright shining light onto an area where they've been pretty much working in the dark. And it is possible for this to work for the company. I give legal advice for free all the time. So I would just say it might be wise for them to file a petition at the FTC saying, here's the way we think MLM should be regulated. There, I believe, is an argument to be made to a judge that there is a pending regulation that the FTC is considering, and the guidance should not be allowed to be used until that particular process is is resolved. That APA, Administrative Procedures Act process is finished. And that process would come up with what the rule is, and then you can fight over the rule at that point as opposed to fighting over the guidance. But there is definitely a way in which even a small company, which is behind the eight ball, might actually be able to have a significant impact. And then, as you say, I don't know the details of this case, so I don't know what the evil that the FTC is trying to stamp out is. But there are some things which are bad enough that this argument is not going to work at all.
Right. Okay, excellent. Okay, good. Well, I'll let you comment on anything else you want to comment, and I appreciate the extra time. This one's a real sensitive issue for those people in the home-based business arena because this may decide what the FTC will do next. Like maybe they might actually have any other – maybe they were planning on suing another company and another one, you know, once a month or whatever it's been, once a quarter lately. But maybe they might put this whole thing on pause because of what this happened. So this affects the industry one way or another. So it was a brilliant move as far as throwing a question mark on, so what do we do next or what's going to happen next or if they're just going to trudge on and stamp this countersuit out like a bug. So we'll see. So I will let you comment, and then we will call it a call after.
We'll find out about the stamping out by like a bug as the judges get involved, and then as I say, there are other guidance cases in various places in the courts, and we'll find out how the guidances survive over time, and then
right.
Finally, I don't have any more things to offer here today because we don't want to open any new subjects, but. There is a lot more to talk about in the health claims area and the whole issue of how the FDA is regulating things. And the FTC is now working to become kind of a little brother of the FDA and require double-blind placebo-controlled studies for advertising. It's a strange situation in which the government is working diligently to gather up more and more and more power in a situation where everything's getting more and more and more out of hand. And if they don't come up with some sound policies on the regulatory side, you could end up with a pretty chaotic, unpleasant situation for consumers.
Right. Excellent information. This is Jim Turner, Citizens for Health attorney. If you go to citizens.org, sign up for the newsletter, you'll get some great action alerts. And you can listen to any one of the previous radio shows that we've done. As you can hear, they are history lessons and all these kinds of great examples. And although if you're listening in, you know, we're not giving you or your company any specific legal advice, so you kind of take it and run with it with just kind of like some experiences and opinions, and then figure out where you want to go from there. And if you need to hire Jim Turner, go to citizens.org and make sure you contact him as well. He's a great attorney, as you can hear. And for those people that are listening in, if you have, especially if you're health and nutrition and fighting the fight, make sure your company owners know this too. There might be a place for Jim to be able to help out your organization as well. So Jim, thanks for being here. We'll catch everybody next week.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Bye now.
And see you next week. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health Radio Show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.